idea actually behind this, and a lot of times you get information and there's always nice to have a Q&A type thing, and never seems to be any way to do that. And so I wanted to try to build into the little loop with this thing the opportunity to talk with the folks that were on the tape and ask questions and just make it a little one-on-one or one-on-30 or whatever it turns out to be.
Okay.
Kind of a question-and-answer consulting session, I guess. So if you have any questions of me or of Jim, fire away, and otherwise we'll talk about whatever seems to make sense. So anybody have anything in mind?
Some other people had some questions that I could get something out of. Like, I was looking at keeping food costs low means larger profit margins. And
I have gotten away from using the phrase of controlling food cost, and what I'm thinking more in terms of managing food cost. Because control, when you talk about controlling it, everybody thinks, you know, make it as low as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I can run you 5% food cost if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not about making it low, it's about making it appropriate. I don't know if I mentioned it on the tape. I had done a program, it was up in Canada, and one of the guys was saying he had been on his gang about food cost, and the way that one of the chefs handled it was put one less slice of bacon on the sandwich, except there was a nice picture on the wall of the restaurant that showed the sandwich with two slices of bacon, and one of the guests just went ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to be messy, and he said he didn't handle it well and all, but, you know, so we saved one slice of bacon and lost a guest.
Right, and see, what we believe in is really high-quality food, making sure that we're letting the guests pay for what we're giving out, as far as that goes. So we charge what we have to make sure that we have a really good quality, and our thing is making sure that everything is accounted for.
I think that's real good. So you're probably real stringent on standard recipes and quality and preparation procedures and things of that.
Yeah.
Now, when you said that you're real concerned, you had procedures or systems built in to count your products. Can you kind of explain what you do in that area?
Every Monday we do a inventory of the whole restaurant.
Okay.
And then the food costs have to come out. Like right now, we're trying to run a 25%.
Wow. Sure.
And we use really high quality food.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like we're doing a good job. We just actually had a kitchen manager that had been with us for about 7 years, and
mm-hmm.
he just left. And then a month we went through where we found out that he wasn't changing. Like every Monday, we change all our prices. So if bacon went up, we change it. Lettuce went up, we change it.
You change your menu prices every week?
Not menu prices, the prices that are in our inventory.
I got you. Okay.
So we change that every Monday, plus we put in and then figure out what our costs are.
I see.
And, you know, we've got it back in. What I learned a really good lesson was that to make sure that when you have someone that's been with the company a long time, to make sure you're keeping your eye on what's happening, even though you think that they're doing the procedures,
mm-hmm.
and you're not double-checking them,
mm-hmm.
and you should be.
Right.
Because I just learned a really good lesson from that in the last month here.
Yeah. What is your menu like?
Our menu is burgers, fish and chips, fettuccine. We have some steak. We have some shrimp. I hate to use the word Red Robin, but we're kind of like a Red Robin, Applebee's.
Okay.
But we're not corporate like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like you're doing, you know, just on the surface, 25% food cost sounds pretty good. And you're doing one of the things that I advocate quite a bit, and that is actually doing a physical inventory every week to determine your food cost
mm-hmm.
every week. Yeah. Because if you do it, what you can do with it at that point?
No,
yeah.
We can't.
Do you ever calculate the number of days sales that you have in inventory?
No.
Okay.
I mean, we do sales, like every day we get a food sale.
Right. Right. Okay. Now, Bill, we talked about number of days of food on hand in the...
On the tape, right.
On the tape, right? Yeah. Yeah.
I believe we did.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to correct myself on that food cost. We're running a 26.25.
Okay.
I have three different restaurants. One of the restaurants I'm running 25.
But
the restaurant I'm talking about, we're running right around a 26.25.
I see.
I know a lot of people would kill for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anything under 28 to 30.
All right, where are you on food cost?
We're in the low to mid-30s.
Okay.
For a hotel operation, that sounds pretty good to me.
What is an average plus, do you know, like in like Red Robin's, Applebee's, those kind of things? Does anybody know?
An Applebee's, Chili's, something like that, historically has run a 28 to 30, 31%.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty standard. I have I know of a DO for an 8 to 10 unit Applebee's chain, and they're right in the 30 range consistently.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of high, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the NRA median is somewhere around 34.
Who's running at 34?
The in the National Restaurant Association operations reports. The median, I think, median food cost for a table service restaurant is somewhere right around 34.
Yeah.
But that's median, so I mean that takes into account steakhouses, which tend to run higher, and Mexican food, which tends to run lower.
What about Italian? I also run an Italian restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what their food cost would be?
Depends on how much veal you think.
Yeah.
We have some bit. We have like two veal dishes.
But pasta generally is a pretty profitable.
Right.
Pretty profitable item.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, Janet, that I tell people not to get too hung up on is just food costs in and of itself. Some profitable restaurants in the country have food costs really approaching 50%. Bob Chin's restaurant, which is a seafood restaurant outside of Chicago, their food costs 46-47% consistently. But they're one of the most profitable restaurants in the country, and you probably ask them, well, how the heck did they do that with the food costs so high? Well, they do incredible volumes. So they give a good value for the dollar. They do about $18.6 million in 20,000 square feet. So their food costs, their cost of sales may be higher than a lot of restaurants, but guess what's a lot lower?
Their labor
cost, exactly. Yeah, their labor costs probably won't run anywhere from 14 to 15, maybe 16%. So really the key number that you want to be concerned about in talking about that is really the leveler when it comes to food cost versus labor cost is what we call prime cost. And prime cost is the total of your food, all of your beverages, and all of your labor costs, including all of your labor payroll, taxes, insurance, workman's comp, and things like that. And if you can, in a full-service restaurant, keep your prime cost below 65%, and in a quick-serve restaurant where you don't have table service below 60%, that's typically where you should be, and you have a pretty good opportunity to be profitable if your other costs line up pretty much consistent with industry averages. So
your prime cost is food cost, labor cost, taxes.
Food, labor, and beverage.
Yeah, food, labor, and beverage. Now, when I said taxes, I meant payroll taxes at the company's mansion, FICA taxes, and things like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because in a lot of ways, I don't care if my food cost is 20% or whether it's 40%. But I really, really care what my prime cost is. That is the big determinator. Yeah. And a lot of times restaurant concepts that have lower food costs, of course, have the higher labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That makes sense?
Yep.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. But I would say in really any world, if you're doing about a 26-27% food cost today, I'd say you're doing something right. Very different. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Just last month we ran at like a 26.27.
Well, that's good. And does it run a week?
Yes.
You don't have a lot of versions. So.
No.
Okay.
We do have a telemarketer.
That's also
thank you.
Looks like we have someone new on board. Who we got?
Hi, you got Edmund Wu.
Edmund Wu, my God. How are you, sir?
Stranger.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, Edmund, how are you?
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Welcome.
Hey, thank you.
So you were in the middle of something with Janet.
Okay. Janet, are we...
I'm fine. Yep, I'm fine with
okay.
Janet.
Okay, fine. It's fine. Edmund, what's going on in North Carolina?
South Carolina.
Sorry.
Just chasing my tail, but I thought I would take a break to come and listen in.
Well, good. Good. We're talking about food costs right now.
Okay.
All right. Did you have anything on that, or what?
No, I don't really have anything to add.
You're just kind of hanging out?
Just kind of hanging out.
Okay, that works. Jim and I both know Edmund from some seminars a while ago, and I think we've both been down there to, or at least I've been down to see his operation.
Yeah, I have not.
Haven't seen the new one.
Yeah.
What's happening with Country French?
Not too bad. You know, we've been working at it, just fighting to keep it breaking even right now.
Okay.
Yeah, just a lot of different issues here and there. But
do you have a new restaurant?
Well, actually, I do, but it's not the one that Bill's talking about. We have three operations. One is a dinners only steaks, fish, wild game. Mm-hmm. The second one is a country French restaurant that's also dinners only. And we recently opened about a month ago a bar tavern kind of operation.
Great.
That's in the downtown market.
So I opened up a new restaurant probably about 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having a hard time getting the profit going, like
right.
Making sure we're making a profit. How long did it take for your restaurant to make a profit?
Well, in the first operation, it probably took me about a year.
Really?
A year or so, yes. But and keeping in mind that, I'm not sure what your situation is, but I have, you know, a full-blown general manager and the chef and all this kind of thing. You know, if I had been working in it, I would probably have realized a profit earlier. And then, of course, you know, you have to factor in all my time and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
The second place that I opened it's been in the black and in the red off and on all year. That's been open a year. And this other place that we just opened 2 months ago, I anticipated being in the black probably mid-April or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a couple months we've made a profit, and then we're losing right around sometimes 2,000, last month we lost 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious how long it takes. I am in the restaurant. I do have a brand new GM that's in the restaurant
mm-hmm.
that I took from another one. And then we've had a couple changes in the chef.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of stuck takes for a profit.
Where are things, Janet? You said that because I was real impressed. You didn't come in time for that, but she's running a 25-26% food cost.
Wow.
And if you're not, so if your food cost is there and you still are not profitable, where are you not profitable?
Labor.
Oh, okay.
What type of operation do you have?
It's an Italian restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Lunch and dinner?
We just closed lunches.
Mm-hmm. Which will probably help you out a whole bunch.
Yep, we just closed it last week, in fact. So this is our first week without lunch. It just doesn't seem like lunch wants to go over very well down
mm-hmm. there. So you gave it all 8 months, that you gave lunch a fair try for 8 months?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
What type of fixed cost have you been able to lower? I'm thinking in terms of salaries now, as you went from two meal periods down to one meal period.
I took out two salary people, which came to over a year. One was getting paid $30,000, and
mm-hmm.
the other one was
$33,000. Wow.
So those are gone, right?
Those two are gone.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's pretty substantial.
Yeah, and then I have two other salary people that are in there
uh-huh.
right now that I'm renegotiating with right now.
I see.
Just to keep dinners open. Dinners, usually we're in a town where we're by a convention, so if there's by an opera house.
Mm-hmm.
So in those months, we do really good, and then if there's nothing going on downtown, then we lose.
Yeah, I see.
So
how many restaurants do you have?
I have four altogether.
Okay.
And three different concepts, though. Mm-hmm. You can imagine that.
Oh, yes.
Edmund can imagine that one really easily.
I have an Italian place, a kind of like a Red Robin, and then also a diner.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a breakfast place.
Is the diner breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Yes. We opened up dinner a year ago. And we were going to close dinner after 6 months and then decided to keep it open, and it's doing really well now. So, yeah.
What kind of volume is the Italian place doing your new place doing just at dinners?
Probably just at dinners, probably 16 mm-hmm. a week.
16 a week.
Mm-hmm. Probably right around in there. Not, you know, I've only had it, you know, 1 week so far of
just dinners.
Yeah, and actually it's probably my thing because with lunch we were doing 16 a week.
Right.
16.7
Wow, but at 14 or 15 with a 25% food cost, you should be making, you will be making money.
Yeah, we should be doing pretty good as far as that goes. For the Italian kitchen, though, we're running like a 25.5 and we want to run a 23.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a fresh sheet where the high quality, you know, the steaks and the veal dishes and a lot of seafoods on there.
How many vendors do you use?
Food or for what?
For food.
Two.
Two. Okay.
We're in a program with all the restaurants where we buy from FSA. We get 3% rebate back.
Okay. Okay. On your gross purchases?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's good.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Yeah.
Edmund, how many vendors do you use?
Well, we have a prime vendor relationship. Actually, we had one for all three restaurants.
Okay.
And we might buy some minor, produce from a couple of guys. And then the State Fish Wild Game Plus, the secondary vendor is the wild game vendor.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, because frankly can't get the wild game from your Cisco's or U.S. Food Service,
right.
Not consistently.
Yeah.
But we're experimenting. We're going back and looking at, and it goes against the very. My philosophy of cherry picking, but mm-hmm. I do have a new chef at the French place who seems to think that he can realize some gains or savings, and I'm going to let him give it a try. Yeah, but we're going to monitor it pretty closely. Okay.
Yeah, I would monitor it pretty closely. Yeah.
So do you do inventory every week then?
Yes, ma'am. Every Monday morning. At Saskatoon right now, at the State Fish Wild Game Place, we're doing about a 34, 35. At the French Place, we're at about the same. And then at the Tavern, we're down at probably about 31. Mm. Yeah. And the 34, 35 at the Wild Game Place is probably a little bit off. In reality, it probably should be around 37, 38 because the wild game is just so expensive. It does so many fillets and that type of thing.
I would say we have four or five prime vendors.
Four or five prime, okay. Are those broadliners like your Cisco's and Alliance?
Yeah, we have Cisco, Dolan Bailey. That's
okay.
There's a bunch of little specialty guys because we try to eat local kinds of specialty things.
Okay. Well, one of the things that you folks are already doing that we were going to discuss, which we won't now, is Bill and I both feel real strongly about prime vendor relationships. For a lot of reasons, we think they will save you money on your food cost. They will free up your time, and we think you get much better service also. But since you folks are already, don't have to be sold on that concept, we will move on to something else.
It's interesting to me, and I know Jim, you and I have talked about the situation I ran into in Pueblo.
Yeah.
I was working on a project in Colorado, and they effectively had a prime vendor relationship with one of their distributors. They were buying just about everything through them, but they hadn't really called it a prime vendor relationship and hadn't formalized it. And when we went out with the prime vendor letter, their vendor came down 10% on all his prices. So he had all the business, but he wasn't giving them the best price. And then Cisco came in 15% under that. So it's one thing to be buying from one person. It's another thing to make sure that that's at least formalized a little bit.
Actually formalize it, yeah.
It's non-contractual, so it doesn't obligate you, but by virtue of them knowing what to expect, they can give you a better price.
Do you want to walk through the steps of actually doing that?
If everybody's done it, it probably.
Are y'all do y'all have it formalized, and how do you know you're getting good prices from your prime vendor?
We go in and compare prices twice a year.
Twice a year, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you say compare prices, you compare prices with
Cisco mostly.
Okay, with the market.
Yeah, FSA and Cisco.
Okay,
I
got you. Okay.
Here.
Okay.
FSA has been really good to us.
Hmm.
That's our main.
That's your main, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll pass that along. I'm doing a program for them in a couple of weeks here.
Yeah, FSA has been wonderful with us.
Yeah, well, good.
But that's pretty much regional Northwest.
Right. Right.
Well, FSA and Cisco is the two main.
Yeah.
I was wondering, all right, when you said that you had several prime vendors, is that, I would take that to mean primary vendors?
Yeah.
Because prime vendor means something else to us, so I just want to make sure we're talking about the same things. So you're talking about...
Yeah, we have a prime vendor relationship with Cisco, and then the others are just certain segments of products. You know, all of our produce comes from one particular area, most of our meats come from another area.
Oh, okay. Okay, we're talking about the same thing then.
And they're the ones that we have the relationship with.
Okay. Do you buy from them on a cost plus basis, or is it just basically, does it kind of float with what their market prices are, or
do you know?
I really couldn't tell you that.
Guy, okay.
We have a steward that handles most of that.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yeah, we set it up when I set up Prime Vendor at the Olympic Training Center. It was either cost plus a fixed price or cost plus a percentage, and it kind of varied with the category. So the produce was all cost plus a buck. And I think some of the canned goods were cost plus 4%, and things like that. But I figured the more they paid, the more I should pay, and the less they paid, the less I should pay, and unless you're at a point where you want to go out and try to contract and predict the market and, you know, lock in at a price, that seemed like the easiest way to do it. So, other questions? What else is going on? Mr. Wu, how can we make your day easier?
Well, now let me make sure, I know everybody's here, that we got Jim, Bill...
Yeah, we got Art from Vermont.
Okay.
Sue Jeff with a hotel in Vermont.
Okay, great.
At least at the moment. Got anybody else lurking in the background? Okay.
No, I think it's just us.
Looks like that's the gang for the moment. So that question being answered, Edmund. What
No, I mean, I frankly, I just always just calling in just to let my mind rest and try to get out of the box a little bit.
Now you have to get in the box and help us out here.
There you go. Well, I tell you one trick. You're talking about payroll and things like that. I don't think, did we talk about overtime on the tape? I can't remember if we did on this one or not.
Right, you did.
We did? Okay.
Yeah.
About changing your work week?
I think we did, yeah.
Okay, good.
Ending the week on a Tuesday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a Thursday or...
Yeah.
Because that was just a great little trick, and I got that from Mark Snead at one of the roundtables.
I see.
Which I really like a lot. But basically the trick with scheduling is to determine what the relationship is between the volume that you're doing and how many people it takes to handle it at an effective level. And so that you have the people when you need the people, and you don't have the people when you don't need them. Which in the front of the house is easier, in the back of in the kitchen it's a little bit trickier because you really need them before you, we're in the dining room, you sort of need them as you're selling it. But have any of you done that to determine a relationship between sales volume and staffing levels at all? Is that something that we ought to talk about?
Well, you know, we have done some. You know, my problem is that, you know, I have a hard time thinking of my weeks as, and I understand what you're saying, but I have a hard time thinking of my weeks as not Monday through Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so long into thinking like that. You know, it's just tough for me to you know, we have everything set up Monday through Sundays. You know, to look at labor, you know, as opposed to sales, and food costs as opposed to sales, and our inventories are done, you know, at the end of the week and so forth so on. So it's been kind of hard.
Well, Monday's definitely an easier day to do inventory than Wednesday, but
because you're lower stuff, right?
But if you're running overtime and it's costing you money, that maybe.
Yeah. Well, what I've found though is in our market, especially with front of the house, you know, with servicing, they don't want to be there when it's not busy,
mm-hmm.
And we deal more with you know, not getting, you know, not we don't worry about them wanting to, about cutting them out early when there's no business. You know, they'll gladly do that themselves. You know,
yes. I find that too.
Yeah.
In fact, I find that when the servers come to work, if we're not busy, they would rather not come on.
Right.
They would rather wait till we get busy.
Right.
You know, and then it comes to the issue, is that legal or not?
Right.
LNI says if you give them the option, then it is legal.
Right.
So I do find that people don't want to come on and clean.
Right.
Because I'm like, okay, Mom, we'll give you this.
You're coming on. You'll be the director of head work.
Yes. They love that side work.
You know, Janet, a fellow by the name of Bill Main had this with his restaurant in California, and you may have heard this, you may be using it to some degree. He called it an on-call program. In other words, he would not intentionally understaff. Let's say that if he was at the borderline between having maybe Tuesday night, they would only have maybe six or seven on the schedule, and maybe one or two of them would be what they called on-call. So they would be ready and available in the wings, so to speak. They didn't come on the clock or anything. They didn't show up unless they received a phone call and their services were needed because the restaurant was busier than usual.
We have that program.
You have that program, mm-hmm. too. Okay.
Yeah. We have that program, too, except I had to change it from an all program to what we in program.
That's what we call it, a call-in.
Yeah. Call-in program.
Because when it was on call, yeah, it took us forever to chase them down to figure out where they were.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And I don't know how legal that is either, Janet. But we say, hey, you've got to call us at 6:05 or 6:30 or 6 o'clock or whatever the day might be.
Uh-huh.
You know, and let us know. And everybody has to work an on-call shift a week.
Oh, one a week. Okay.
Yeah.
How often when the person calls, do they actually come in and work?
Well, right now, you know, because the staff is a real good staff.
Mm-hmm.
We typically, one out of 10 shifts that on-call actually has to be used because somebody didn't show up.
Okay.
But sometimes we do have a on-call or call-in do come in because, volume is bigger than anticipated.
Yeah, I see. Do you talk to employees about applicants when they're before they're hired about that program? Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, we tell them how to read the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, and what that means. But
yeah.
They have to call at that time.
I see. All right, good.
Yeah, one thing that we're working toward is that while we're on the subject of scheduling on call-ins and so forth, where we're working toward, we haven't gotten there yet, is that everybody's trying to set their ideal schedule, and that we're trying to give it to them, and that they're responsible for whatever ideal schedule they set up. So instead of us doing the schedule every week, basically, hopefully, the schedule will already be done. So if we lose someone and we go out to hire someone, we're hiring someone for a specific schedule.
Mm-hmm.
What's your average staff? Like, what's the age of your average staff?
Front of house or back of the house?
Front of the house.
They're about 23, 24.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Well, we're close probably to 18 up, actually.
Right. Well, yeah, but most of our guys, because we're dinners only in the two operations, and just now doing lunch and dinner the other, because we get a lot of people who do work full time during the day,
uh-huh.
and who are looking to pick up two to three or four shifts a week.
Mm.
So we do have some 23, 24, 25, and they're restaurant people, but they have full time jobs and they're college graduates, so we've been real lucky that way.
So if you're dinner only, how many people do you have on salary as far as managers?
Well, we're a right-to-work state in South Carolina, so I technically I have, in the front of the house, I have one manager that's on salary, but on the back of the house at the Wild Game Place, I have four people on salary, and then at the French Place, I have two, and in the Tavern Place, I have one person in front of the house, two people in the back of the house at salary.
Because I just went to one place with just dinners, and I just have two people on salary
mm-hmm.
right now, one in the front and one in the back.
Right.
And then I have, extra helpers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So what is your labor cost working working out at all your places?
When you're talking labor, are you talking payroll,
including
taxes,
management,
everything?
Yeah, everything.
Well, with just like wages, training, management, salary, janitors, salaries at the Italian Kitchen, I'm running right around 36.
Wow.
That's high.
That is not extremely
high. Not really.
Now remember.
Not against the 26% food cost.
Yeah,
exactly.
Relative to that, it's not that high. And also, you're in Washington. You don't have the benefit of the tip credit, right?
No.
So you're paying servers at least
$6.25,
right?
$6.50.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, that makes a big difference.
That does make a difference.
That's in my Italian. Just open for dinners, which I just started.
Yeah.
And then the other restaurant that is more like a Red Robin, which includes wages, training, management, mm-hmm, salary, janitors, training bonuses, and bookkeeping, I'm running right around 29-30%.
Wow.
That doesn't include benefits because we have vacation pay, group insurance, employee discounts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which would probably be another 3-4%.
Yeah. Well, the total labor with all that in there is actually at 31.
I see.
32.
Not bad. I mean, Jana, that
sounds great to me.
Yeah, your
I'll take it.
Is really
You'll
good.
Take it?
That's right.
You can come work for me then.
I will.
Yeah, we run pretty quite tight budgets. We rebudget probably 2 times a year. And I actually don't do the rebudgeting. I let my managers do it and tell me what they need.
Okay.
And as long as they buy into it, then I know that they can do it.
Yeah.
As far as we inventory all our liquor on Mondays, and then they also have to match their breakage with their bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't match up, like we didn't have a match up probably about a month ago, we had some problems. We had about 8 bottles missing, which I called in all the bartenders, called in the janitors. And I warned everyone that I'm on the lookout, asked for voluntary polygraph tests. And then all of a sudden, my liquor class came back in.
Hmm.
Do you have a way to know that those are in fact your bottles?
Well,
I mean, do you mark
yes,
things when they come in
them.
so we know that they're yours and not one that they brought in just to exchange an empty for a full?
Oh, I never thought about that. Well, we in the morning time we mark them. We do a liquor breakage.
Yeah, what you may want to do is have some sort of a decal stamp or something you put on when things are received. Because otherwise, it's a great scam to, you know, I'll just bring in an empty bottle of Jack Daniels from home, swap it off for a full one, and as far as the break goes, it all works out.
Now, no one has figured that one out yet.
Uh-oh.
Don't put that on a tape or in a book or anything.
Somebody's figured it out.
Yeah.
And all of
you might be surprised that somebody may have figured it out already. I heard of one case where someone thought they'd get real clever, and they had a remote liquor room, and they just piped it all in and had guns and went into one of the janitor's closets and took out a piece of drywall, and the hoses ran through there, and they tapped into the hose and were just dripping off about a fifth a day.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it just sort of, you know, dribbled out.
Oh,
and then they,
my
you know,
gosh.
They put the bottle inside the wall, put the wallboard back, put a bucket in front of it, and then at the end of the day they'd come in and put another bottle there and go home.
Oh my gosh, that amazes me.
Oh, the ingenuity. If they just put that ingenuity into doing the job, it would be awesome.
That's true.
And sort of brings me to a question of sort of what interesting scams have you turned up for, or have you, in terms of people getting clever at going into business for themselves with your money?
Well, we had one fired our janitors probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and they had worked for us for quite a few years. And what they did is what we figured out, and we actually adjusted our food cost, I'm sure, to what they were doing. They took the same amount of food out of our restaurant every week, like so much, so many chicken breasts, so many ham. They even took bread, chips. They knew we counted the steak, so they took steak. And they actually took not a lot, but evenly the same food every week. And they did to that. And the reason why we found out about it was I hired, we had some money stolen from the one of our safes, and I hired an investigator to come in, and then all of a sudden they confessed to everything. But I actually believe that we adjusted our food costs and our liquor costs to what they were doing, because they were smart. They took the same amount out every week. So our costs weren't going up and down.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So that was very interesting.
Gee.
Yeah.
Now, you count. You said you counted, they didn't take your steaks because they knew you counted the steaks.
We count them daily.
You count those daily. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it daily?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
it. Okay.
Steaks we count daily.
Yeah. Yeah. Some restaurants will count, will do some sort of a deviation of their top 10 items. Let's say their top 10 food items that make up the biggest percent or bulk of their food costs.
Mm-hmm.
I know that when I worked for a barbecue chain, we would count brisket, all of our meats, chicken, brisket, sausage, and then also our fries. Even though fries was not a high cost per unit item, it made up a pretty big percent of our total food cost. And we would do buns also. And those top 10 or 11 items probably made up close to 60, maybe even a little bit more, percent of our overall food cost. So, in essence, we were controlling every single day, at least doing a reconciliation with our cash register that told us what we, the quantities that we should have sold based upon, or should have used based upon what our sales were every single day.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
There's some quick service chains that count cups.
Yeah, they count cups, exactly. And they reconcile that to how many soft drinks they sold.
Janet, does your POS system force a beverage?
Now, what's that again?
Does your POS system force a beverage? In other words, do people have to put in a beverage in order to ring the ticket?
No, not like soft drinks.
Okay. Might be something to look at.
No, like liquor items you have to.
Yeah, but what will happen, and sometimes, even if they just get water, you got to put that in. Because it gets you around the issue of people just forget. They get busy and they get the soda and they mean to go back and put it on the check and they never do.
Mm-hmm. What happens is when the managers start tables for people like I know, things don't get rang in.
Yeah, so I mean, and you can set up the POS so it'll force that.
Yeah.
So you got to put in something, even if you say no beverage.
Yeah, Janet Chili's, for example, this was a number of years ago when they just went to a point-of-sale system that electronically transferred the order from the front of the house to the back of the house. They programmed their systems to force a beverage for every single entree on the ticket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even if it was water, they had to put in water. It would be, be zero charge for it. But they saw their sales go up a point and a half to 2 points in virtually every one of their restaurants.
Really?
Yeah, and most of it was because a lot of iced teas, a lot of soft drinks just never made it on the guest check prior to that.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I called today.
Ah, that give you what you, that give you what you needed?
Okay. I mean, that's something that I used to do at some two of my former places,
uh-huh.
Just over the years, you change that, and you kind of forget all about it. That's great.
Well, good.
Well, we got two out of three handled, Art. What do you need? You still with us, Art?
I'm still with you.
Okay, great. This all working for you?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, great.
I don't have access to a lot of the information that you guys are talking about.
Is your hotel a fairly large hotel, Art, or...?
Yeah, it's a good size.
Is it? How many rooms?
We have about 200 rooms.
200 rooms. Okay. You do a lot of banquets and parties and things like that, too? Okay.
Okay. What was that percentage again of when that fourth drink? What did you say?
Point and a half.
About 1.5 to 2%.
1.5.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty staggering. Yeah. And I was talking to one of the managers with a Chili's here in Houston, and his sales went up right at 2%. And he said he didn't even think it was really intentional. He says just that they run it so many of their stores run at such a high volume all the time He thinks the server just, you know, basically forgot about it.
I do too. I don't think that most people mean to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, great. If nothing else out of this, I got that. I'm very happy about that.
For every Coke and iced tea that you're basically giving away, I mean, that's a buck that doesn't go to your bottom line.
Right,
goes right straight to the bottom. Yeah.
Well, let me put in a little plug here for coffee. I'm kind of on a coffee mode. I'm doing a project for the it's actually a consortium of coffee producing countries, and they were looking at how to increase sales, particularly among the younger people, 18 to 24 year olds, because they were folks that tended to drink cold sweet stuff. Yeah, you know, they like soft drinks, things like that. And it really got me into looking at coffee and how coffee is being used and so forth. And in most restaurants, coffee now is about where wine was back in the 50s. And back in the 50s, if you wanted wine, it was, we got red, we got white, we got pink. And that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And now you can't get away with that because people are educated and they don't want to, it's not about do you have it, it's what kind do you have. But with coffee, for the most part, it's still pretty much regular and decaf. Mm-hmm. And so that's roughly the equivalent of, you know, red and white. And that there is an option there, there's an opportunity there to offer more choices in coffee and pick that sale up. Because it doesn't take you away from a sale in another area. So if someone's going to drink Diet Pepsi through the meal, they can still have coffee at the end of it. Having coffee at the end of the meal doesn't lose you the sale of the Diet Pepsi. Plus, it's a little bit more complex and things like that. So I think there's a terrific opportunity to add some items to the menu. I wouldn't change the regular and the decaf. And we didn't get, purposely did not get into espresso and cappuccino and so forth, because that's a little bit more equipment intensive for operators. But basically, we added three. The program that we came up with adds three items to the menu. One is a, call it sort of a frozen latte, but basically it's milk and coffee and ice and some sort of sweetener. It's blended and served cold. There is a coffee with chocolate, and there's a sort of a medium roast gourmet coffee. So one of the problems that the younger people had with coffee was they said it was bitter and it had an aftertaste. And so they were trying to come up with something that was a little bit more gentle on the palate. If you are interested in any of these, I have a CD that sort of outlines what the program's about. I can send you the recipes and so forth that they came up with. But I think we're going through some pilot studies on it right now, and it looks like there's some significant opportunity there to add some sales without adding a lot of cost. Because all you need to pull this off is AirPods.
Bill, out of those three additional offerings,
mm-hmm.
Do all of them require separate new equipment, or
none of them do?
None of them do.
Because all you're doing with the mocha is you're just brewing coffee and then adding chocolate to it.
Okay.
Adding a chocolate syrup to it, or a hot fudge, or something that. Mm-hmm. And the other one is just a brewed. It's basically a gourmet coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets a chance to upsell it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it gets to coffee, it's not do you want it, but what type would you like?
Mm-hmm.
And we're having some pretty good luck right now with having actually a dessert menu. So rather than saying, you know, do you want dessert, you bring them the dessert menu, and it's got the coffees, it's got the desserts, they may have after dinner drinks.
I see.
Because that's what I'm thinking about. I was to put desserts on the regular entree menu, because
mm-hmm.
people aren't making the decision at that point.
Right.
And you don't want to bring them back the whole menu just so they can figure out what they want for dessert.
Yeah.
Because our desserts are on our main menu
at
one of our restaurants.
Well, it depends on the level of service, too.
No, at the Onion, that kind of like the Red Robin Applebee's one. We don't have a separate dessert one, but it makes sense to have a separate one.
But if it's an Applebee's-type concept, though, I mean, I think it's appropriate to have desserts on the menu.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not bad, but there's an opportunity. I mean, I kind of like having an appetizer menu, an entree menu, and a dessert menu. So at the beginning of the meal, here's the stuff I want. And the way I set it up, I actually did this in my restaurant in San Francisco back in the Dark Ages, where when you were seated, you got a drink menu. It was drinks and appetizers, and when the server came to the table, they brought the entree menu. So when you first sit down, here's what I want you thinking about. So here it is. Now that it depends on the level of service that you're providing, but I would think the more upscale you go, the more appropriate that is.
Yeah, I would see more upscale, not more like.
Although we were a very casual operation, it worked well for us.
One thing a lot of people, when it comes to getting a dessert menu, they really don't want to see the full menu again. They'd probably rather just look at that, you know, look at a special menu, one that they haven't seen before.
Right.
Again, that might be splitting hairs, but.
But if you go into a Applebee's type concept, I mean, sometimes you're in there. I mean, you're sort of grazing, or I mean, sometimes you're eating apps and desserts and so forth, so on.
But I think it might be worth an experiment. I mean, the nice thing is now it's getting easy enough to print those yourself that you could try it and see what happens. My guess is that anything that gets more attention gets more sales. I mean, if you did nothing else but pay more attention to your coffee, you'd sell more coffee.
Well, I'm going to have to hang up because I have to go to a meeting.
Someone has to be working today, Janet.
But I thank you. I've got some great information.
Great, good.
And
thank
hopefully
you.
We'll do this again and get more people involved.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, we appreciate it. Thanks for sitting in with us.
Thank
good
you,
luck.
Well, we've got a few minutes left. They need us off of here pretty much on time because someone else is coming in behind us on this. But what else can we do that would help?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and hang up. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Thanks, Janet. So, that's okay. That's how we know.
Which is pretty cool.
Is this all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting technology, and it may even be an opportunity. I'm wondering, you know, just occurred to me, a lot of times there's a problem when we try to do staff meetings and we're trying to have someone come in on their day off or they're somewhere weird. There might be some way to tie them in like this and have them be part of the discussion without them physically having to show up.
Right.
What this is called is a bridge. So there's a colleague of mine that has a phone bridge, which basically is just a big party line, and this one will hold 30. There are some that hold 200. I'm not sure how you'd manage 200 people on the line, but I guess it's doable.
And this is supplied by your local phone company?
Well, this is actually a piece of equipment, I think, that resides at a given phone number. This number happens to be in Nevada. Steve's in Texas, so I'm not quite sure why Nevada, but maybe there's a reason. And I just rent it from him. And so for $10 an hour, you know, 30 people can call in and talk to each other. So it's a pretty interesting concept.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And then we'll see if we can get I'm not sure if the recording is working right on this thing, but if we at least have one to experiment with. And what I'll try to do with these things in the future is just have them posted on the website so you'll be able to go in and check it out.
If we miss one, we can listen in.
Yeah, so if you missed it, or you go back again, or you've got one of your managers, that there's some way that you can go get it. I say I'm not totally sure if this one.
And we're going to be getting together once a month on the phone like this.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, so it's just a chance, just a way to be able to get together with whoever it was that made the tape, and ask questions and. You know, listen in, and I mean, so a lot of times you get as much from other people's questions as you do from your own.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's okay to come to these meetings with necessarily not any questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Art has been pretty much just hanging through this thing, and that's fine. I mean, I think part of it is learning. You know, this is just another way to communicate and. As you become more comfortable with it, maybe you find different ways to use it. I think we'll probably find a year from now we're doing a lot more with it than we are right now, just because nobody's figured it out yet. At least I would hope that's true.
Yeah.
Any other closing thoughts, Jim? Pithy words of advice that.
I don't know. This was kind of an experience for me. I'm kind of thought we had a good, you know, even though it was a small group of folks, I thought we had some good discussion, and I saw some folks doing, you know, folks were doing some good things in the area of food cost control. Anybody that knows what their food cost is every week and has adopted a prime vendor type of mentality is probably doing some other things right too. So I don't know. I don't have a whole lot to add at this point, Bill.
Perfect. Well, if everybody's got what they came for, we can pack it up and let you guys get back to work.
Oh, shoot.
Unless you want to stay on and tell stories, Edmund, we can
That's
do that.
That's right, no. But enjoy talking to you guys.
Terrific.
Same here, Edmund.
Thanks, Art. Jim.
Art, thanks for logging on.
Thanks for coming, and we will catch you all next month.